Pleased now to be joined by VFL Steve Hamer. Steve, how you doing?
Jimmy, I'm doing fantastic, man. I hope that you are doing great as well.
Absolutely. Looking forward to a terrific weekend. Great weather out here right now. Hey, I want to ask you about a couple of NCAA proposals. One is they're looking at calling a technical foul if somebody flops. Now, it used to be that you would give a warning. I have a little bit of concern because I don't like giving officials any more judgment calls. I think they have enough trouble with them as they are. But do you think it's justifiable to give a technical foul for players that flop?
You know, I'm with you. I totally concur, Jimmy. I try to limit the amount of calls, if you will, already in a collegiate basketball game. I think there's far too many calls. It interrupts the flow of a basketball game sometimes. And, you know, you're talking about some situations in which a guy flops and now you're calling technical fouls. I don't like that. You know, I like the warnings. I like for the official to talk to the player. But in terms of giving him more power and interrupting the game even more, because, Jimmy, let's face it, this will be one of those situations in which it's going to be replayed.
Right.
It's going to be reviewed. So now let's further interrupt the flow of the game, go to the monitor again for the 51st time and see if this guy actually flopped or not. So that's going to be a tough, tough situation. I hope that we don't go down that road of dealing with flops at this point.
Now, another one out there, and excuse me if you've been asked this before, but they're thinking about adding a sixth foul for the college player. I would think most people 7 feet would love that one, but I'll get your take on it in just a second. I'm in favor of this, and the only reason is to me, officiating is so poor. I've watched so many games where they make a couple of bad calls against the star player for setting an illegal screen when it wasn't an illegal screen or whatever, and then the next thing you know, the best player's sitting out the first 15 minutes of the first half. So there's a part of me that feels like I'd like to give them a sixth foul. I know they do it in the NBA because they play 8 more minutes. Do you think granting a sixth foul in college is justifiable?
I think it's very justifiable. You look at what happened to Tennessee basketball at a couple of different points this year where E. Pons, remember playing Alabama here, picked up 2 to 3 early fouls and had to sit out for the remainder of that first half and never really got into the flow of the game against Alabama. You know, they went on to win that game going away. But then you look at the tournament as well. E. Pons picked up a couple of quick, terrible calls, in my opinion. You know, I'm a bit of a homer, but I remember a screen in which he was called for an illegal screen that was just outrageous, ridiculous.
Yep.
But that took him out of the flow of the game as well. So, you know, let's be honest here. We want to maximize the opportunity for the most valuable players on each team to play. You know, fans want to come out. They pay money to see these guys play, not to have the officials interject themselves and thus taking the most important guys on the floor out of the game. And maybe they never get into the rhythm of the game, which happened to Tennessee quite often this year. So I'm all for, you know, that extra foul. I would have loved to, you know, have that happen back in my heyday, you know. I don't know that I ever had a heyday, but back when I played, you know, that would be very beneficial for me to have that extra foul. But, you know, I'm all for it.
There's some people think that it's going to lead to more brutality. I don't think so. I don't think that, oh, I got an extra foul, so I'm going to knock the heck out of somebody. I don't think they play that kind of basketball much anymore. So that's not the issue for me. And somebody wrote, well, not that many star players fouled out. Yeah, that's because they took them out of the game with 15 minutes left in the first half. That's why they didn't foul out. So I didn't think that was a very good argument.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, you take the best player out of the game, and, again, it completely messes up the chemistry. It messes up the flow of the game. And it potentially has a direct impact on the outcome of the game, Jimmy.
Yeah.
So let these guys play. It's not going to create a Kevin McHale and Dennis Rodman. It's not going to create that type of atmosphere, but it is going to allow these guys to, if they are called for an inadvertent, you know, foul in the first half, it won't cost them because it won't have them sit out for large periods of the game.
I haven't been able to verify this, but I was talking to a football coach early this week, and he told me there was a presentation made to this particular staff in which somebody said that 30% of football players that enter the transfer portal don't find a home. That's stunning to me that many of them would find themselves in that position. Steve, does that suggest that these players that enter the transfer portal need to proceed with caution?
Very much so. It tells me that they're getting some bad advice. They're getting some bad intel. You know, you've got to understand that, you know, these players have to become comfortable in the growth zone. And maybe the growth zone is these guys understanding that, look, maybe I didn't come here to play for this coach, but I could end up having a tremendous amount of playing time. Maybe I could expand my game. Maybe I can get better by sticking it out. But, you know, when you got people, you know, over your shoulder and in your ear telling you, man, you need more playing time. You know, you're not getting enough playing time. You're not getting enough buckets. You're not getting enough, you know, exposure. Then all of a sudden you got the guys saying, well, you know, maybe I should transfer. And that's why you end up with 2,100, 2,200 players in the transfer portal. And, Jimmy, there's not going to be a home for everyone. Yeah. So now what are these guys going to do with that bad intel, with that bad advice? Sometimes the best option is just sticking around and making the most out of that opportunity.
And that's the thing. I'm torn a little bit because on this transfer stuff, I think that if you grant the one-time transfer, you almost encourage some players to quit. I got benched or the coach yelled at me, I'm going to the transfer portal. But then on the other hand, there's a part of me that wants to do what's best for the student-athlete, so I'm a little bit torn on that issue. I do want to ask you this. So we have seen the Tennessee roster. We believe we know what that roster is going to look like. What would be your starting five? Who do you see starting for Tennessee in the first game this upcoming season?
Wow. Jimmy, that's a tough one, but I'll take a stab at it. You know, I think they're going to be so much more balanced this upcoming season than they were last year. So for that, you know, I've got to put Fulkerson at the four. You know, he's yep. going to be my centerpiece. I got to put him at the four. Then I'm going to start Kennedy Chandler day one at the point guard position. I think he's going to bring so much to the floor. Now, is he going to be a 20-point scorer a night? No, I don't think that's the type of player he's going to be. But he's going to be the facilitator. He's going to be a guy that if he needs to take shots, he will take shots. He'll knock them down, but he's going to push the ball. And therefore, you know, I'm going to have Brandon Huntley Hatfield in the starting lineup playing the three. I'm going to have him there. I'm going to have either Josiah Jordan James or Victor Bailey or Santiago Biscobi playing that two. Just depends on the matchups that we've got. And then I'm going to play Jonas Adu. I'm going to put him in at the five. He's going to give us great length. He's going to put on some muscle. He's got to get stronger, got to get a little tougher. But from everything that I'm hearing about this kid, he's got tremendous work ethic, and he's ready to come in and work right away. But Jimmy, just beyond that, think of the bench that we've got now. You got the Meshack kid, who I don't know if you've seen video of this guy working out, but, man, he looks like a monster. You know, he looks like he's ready to go right now. And you've got all the other guys, the complimentary pieces that we can put in. So, you know, I just can't wait. I cannot wait for day one.
Well, that would be a tall lineup as well. If you went with James, then you're 6'6", 7 foot, 6'9", 6'9". That's pretty good
size
right there. Yeah. Okay. NBA question. So give me your take on Russell Westbrook. He is one triple-double shy of Oscar Robertson's career NBA record. He has he leads the NBA, get a load of this, since the All-Star break, he has more assists and more rebounds than any player in the league. The last time somebody did that in the second half of the season was Wilt Chamberlain. How good is Russell Westbrook to you?
Jimmy, he's on an unbelievable tear. I read some stat that you could probably – tell me if I'm wrong or right about this, but I read a stat in which he could go scoreless for the rest of the season and still be averaging a triple-double. It just blows me away that he, at his size, attacks the basket like no other. He plays with reckless abandon, and he's making his team better. You know, the Wizards, they've gotten a lot better. Yeah. You know, Bradley Beal has come along. He's averaging a lot of points as well. They got complementary pieces that are playing better. But you know, I never saw Oscar Robertson play. But, man, I hear people talk about that comparison all the time, that
yeah.
he is this version or this new age version of Oscar Robertson.
Yeah, I saw Oscar Robertson play. He didn't push it up the court as much as Westbrook. But, gosh, Oscar was incredible. But Westbrook is putting up unbelievable numbers as well. You mentioned Bradley Beal. Now, help me with this one. He has scored 40 points 29 times in his NBA career. They're 7-22 when he scores in the 40s. How do you explain that one?
He's taking too many shots, taking the onus on himself. He's not distributing the ball. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, when you got a guy that's averaging that many points over that period of time, or that scoring that many points over that period of time, it just tells me that he's taking way too many shots. And furthermore, I'd like to see his shooting percentage. Is he shooting at a good clip? Is this guy, you know, is it taking 40 attempts to get the 40 points? Because that just tells me not enough guys are involved. And most times, Jimmy, if you will share the ball, maybe the ball comes back to you and you have a better look at a basket. Or if you share the ball, your teammates get involved. And when you get bigs involved, especially, they're more apt to play harder on the defensive end. They're more apt to run the floor, and you just got to get everyone else involved. So that, I think, to me, that's why their record is so poor when he scores that amount of points.
Zion Williamson, he's out indefinitely with a broken ring finger. How good is Zion Williamson?
He's really good. Jimmy, you know, when he's averaging, I think he's averaging 20 points a game in the paint, which, you know, I believe that's one of the best averages since Shaquille O'Neal back in the day. I mean, he's
yep.
really good. The thing that I don't understand, Jimmy, is why don't more teams lay on that right shoulder? Because oftentimes, every time you see Zion Williamson catch the ball in the paint, he's going over that right shoulder. So why don't more teams lay on that right shoulder? But, man, you talk about just a beast on the inside that at his size that can elevate quickly and get off of the floor, that can run the floor. He is unbelievable, and that's going to be a big-time loss for the Pelicans.
If I guarded him, I would just flop and dare him to call a technical. all right, Steph Curry, 34 games this year with 30 points. That's the most by a player 32 years or older since Kobe Bryant 9 years ago. Is Steph Curry the best shooter you've ever seen?
I think he is. And I grew up watching what I thought at the time was the best shooter and probably the best trash talker at the time, and that was Larry Bird.
Yeah.
You know, I well remember times in which Bird would take a shot and turn around and look at the bench and talk trash and knock the shot down. Not the most athletic guy in the world, but, man, he could create space and shoot over anyone. But Steph Curry, to me, surpasses that. I think, Jimmy, because he handles the ball so well, you can't run a double team at him because he's going to find the open teammate. You know, but you got to guard him at midcourt. So, you know, he is the best pure shooter that I have ever seen.
All right, one more question. Do you think that the losing streak or the struggling of the Nets and Lakers, do you care? Does that matter going into the playoffs, or does it really matter that they're just healthy?
I think it matters. You know, Jimmy, it's hard to just flip the switch, turn the light on and say, you know, I know that, you know, LeBron's been out and KD's been out and Harden's been out, but as soon as the playoff, you know, game is tipped, the ball is tipped, we're fine. We're in mid-season form. I don't subscribe to that theory. I think that chemistry is really going to hurt the Nets going down the stretch here. And furthermore, if the Lakers are not careful, you know, the game tonight is huge between them and the Trailblazers, because if they lose that game tonight, it knocks them into the play-in game scenario. And that's, that's anybody's game at that point. So it's going to be difficult for both of those teams, in my opinion, to win a championship as they are constructed with the injuries.
Steve Hamer, great to catch up with you. Always enjoy it. Thank you for doing so. We look forward to visiting with you again next week.
Jimmy, same here. And by the way, excellent interview with Bobby Mays yesterday. I really enjoyed that piece that you did. Kudos to Bobby Mays.
Yeah, absolutely. We appreciated him joining us. Thanks, Steve. Take care. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.